Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to you with your host, Avenger Satanus, and the Beast.
Hey, all you out there, thanks for tuning in. It's a fine Saturday. My co-host, Avenger Satanus, is here with me. Avenger, how you doing, man?
Good. Just want to say out there, welcome to the tentacle-loving temple of the Cthulhu cult's mouthpiece, known as the Ooze. Our left-hand path talk radio show.
Yeah, it's actually kind of wild. When we first started off the Ooze, we weren't intending it to be the mouthpiece of the Cthulhu cult, but served well that way.
Yeah, you were very much on the fence, and I was happy to have you on the fence and not know exactly. I mean, you knew I had some good ideas, but you didn't know quite where I was coming from. You didn't know me that well, and you didn't really know the cult of Cthulhu that well. And, you know, I was very hesitant to, you know, immerse you in that because, you know, I'm not about converting people and, you know, trying to brainwash people or get them on my side or whatever. I think people need to come to certain paths and certain elements of truth on their own. Because it takes, it has a much stronger take and people can create roots. Whereas otherwise, if you just try to get people on the bandwagon, it's very easy for them to fall off the bandwagon, and that doesn't help anybody. If you want to be in on this, you got to be committed and wholeheartedly want to be in on it.
And hence, the sequence of events that's happened with me. So,
yeah,
certainly I think it's amazing how misunderstood your philosophies are. As a matter of fact, I think it's because of the dubious nature of the term cult.
That has something to do with it, yeah.
Beyond that, I think that people just don't understand certain principles of the fourth way, and they definitely don't understand chaos magic. And I can't imagine that anybody claiming to be an occultist wouldn't at least have a basic understanding of it, but that does seem to be the case.
Yeah. Let me ask you something. In my personal opinion, it's always the organizations and religions and you know, spiritual groups that have a good-sounding euphemism for what they are. They are really the danger, or there's a much more creepy vibe coming off of something, some group called, the Foundation for Sunny Awakening, or something like that, or the Disciples of Loving Group. I mean, that kind of has, you know, you kind of read into it like, oh, it's a cult, and they don't want you to know it's a cult. Like, I get it, and yeah, I'm going to run away now, because that's fucking creeping me out. But with the Cthulhu cult, we just come right out and say it. You know, we're an offbeat, very small, devoted, fanatical religion that, you know, you're not going to hear about on your mainstream news. And, you know, we're occasionally dangerous and mean business. But we put it all on Front Street. You know, we put all it out there. We don't try to hide anything. We don't try to come off as, people that just want to help people or do altruistic things. you know, we're in it for ourselves, but also hopefully to benefit the rest of humanity along with ourselves.
I absolutely agree with you. In fact, I think that you come to a point in which you realize that the only way that you can further benefit yourself is by benefiting humanity. And what I mean is that ensuring the continuation of our species, the further propagation of it.
Mm-hmm. And the liberation of our species as well. So eventually, I hope we'll come to a point where 99.9% of the human population isn't imprisoned in this world dominated by, you know, the lesser gods of the earth and all these elements that want us to suffer and not get anywhere in life and stay asleep. And that's something that, you know, Satanism and other left-hand path areas, you know, haven't really grasped, that sometimes after you help yourself, you know, it behooves you to help other people, you know.
Certainly. I mean, the thing that you have to deal with here, and whether you're atheist, theist, or whatever, you have to deal with number one, your portion of responsibility in the place of our own evolution as a species, along with the, you know, the struggle for survival within it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I think it's a two-part thing. Again, like I said, anybody who is truly trying to better themselves will at some point come to a conclusion that, you know, they've got to do their piece to help propagate the continued existence of our society, because if it's just allowed to run amok, it'll do as all other, you know, things in nature have done that have just run amok, and it'll decay and eventually will face extinction.
Right. Yeah, who knows? Extinction might be right around the corner if we don't shape up and try to do something different with our lives and our lifestyle. You never know.
I agree entirely. Hang on a second. I got a text message coming in. My son's mother's concerned about my son. He was running a little bit of a fever when I picked him up this morning. So.
No problem. In the meantime, let me just say that we'd love people to call in, since we don't have a set topic. You can.
All right, so I'm basically just telling her that I gave him some Tylenol.
Oh, okay. That's good.
And he should be good.
Cool. Our call-in number is 347-989-1371. So, yeah, we encourage people today of all days to call in and talk to us. As we're here and, you know, we're talking about whatever comes to our mind or whatever people want to call in and talk about. So again, it would be really, really great if someone called in and talked to us, but hey, you don't do that, it's your loss. And we'll just talk about whatever we feel like talking about. First Priest of Relay, Vizino, myself, High Priest Venger Satanus. We're in the mother-loving temple, or tentacle-loving temple, that is, I guess. Anyway, so what else would you like to talk about?
Oh, goodness, there's a ton of things that we could possibly talk about. One of my favorite things to talk about is midget porn, but I typically tend to beat that subject to death. So instead of talking about midget porn, let's talk about plastic porn.
Plastic porn. Sure. I think
plastic
I know where you're
porn.
Going
with this. I would hope you know where I'm going with this.
Would you possibly be talking about Florette Satanus? By a real
doll? Absolutely.
Dog? Okay.
I certainly would.
For those who don't know, about 5.5 months ago now, I ordered a real doll and you can find it on realdoll.com. It's basically a life-size, very realistic silicone woman that people order for all sorts of different reasons. But it's a sexual toy. Some people use it, you know, in place of a real woman for companionship as well, and things like that. It's like some sort of plastic girlfriend. But mostly it's a realistic plastic silicone woman to have sex with. And it's got working parts, more or less. And it's expensive. It's about $6,000. So, yeah, they're not cheap. And it takes about 5 months for them to make it from the time you ordered it till delivery. So, and I got mine about 2 weeks ago. So, okay, if you have a specific question, ask away. Or, oh, my God, I think we have a caller.
We do. Let's throw them on.
Hello. How's it going, boys?
It's going good.
It's going.
You are a very familiar voice on the ooze.
I'm sorry?
I said you were familiar voice on the ooze.
Yeah. Well, you know me, man. I can't miss too many shows.
Yeah.
This wouldn't be lawful.
That's good. That's good. I'm not good with numbers, but I'm very good with voices and faces. And as soon as I hear your voice, I'm like, oh, it's that guy.
Dan's hooves. So I
cool.
was wondering if you guys would care to talk about mythology or what kind of mythology you relate to closest.
Okay.
Like, if that could be cool. I mean,
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Do you want to take this one first, Beast?
Actually, no, I'll let you. I'd be interested to hear what you have to say.
Okay. So... By mythology, do you mean any kind of...
Any kind, you know, including, of course, classic mythology, Rome, Greek.
Okay.
Any kind of... It could be even, like, Gnostic, like Egyptian or, you know, Scythian or whatever it is.
Right. I think as a kid, I was really into, more classical things like Greek and Roman and mythology and Egyptian stuff like that. But as time goes by, you know, especially in America, everything is so Christian dominated that the Christian mythology and saints and all that kind of takes hold.
That's true.
And then some of that kind of bled over into like Temple of Set, which I belonged to over a very short period of time. Now, of course, I would cite the Cthulhu mythos as my favorite mythology and what I'm closest to. And that kind of relates a little bit with more ancient, like Sumerian, Mesopotamian kind of mythology. Really only in a Simon Necronomicon kind of way. So
Sumerian, that goes... Is that what the Cthulhu, a lot of it is based in? Like, is that from what it the ooze that it kind of, you know, not no pun intended, but the primordial like creation that it came out was Sumerian, Mesopotamian.
Well, I think that's the interesting thing, that Lovecraft took not only a lot of old legends and ancient mythologies and things that he had read about, but he also introduced a lot of new concepts, a lot of new groundbreaking theories and paradigms and sort of God descriptions. And so it's a mishmash of the old and very new and some stuff that's more invented and postmodern.
Oh, I see. All right.
And I think that's the power of the Cthulhu mythos. Is that?
So I'm wondering your take, though, on what do you think, like, of classical myth, like, say, Greek myth, you know, of, like, say, Poseidon, Medusa, all these, as actually kind of being relevant amongst, like, occultism and the archetype for ritual and all that kind of stuff. Do you think they really are valuable? Or
I think only if the individual finds them aesthetically appealing for one reason or another. I, I don't personally think that, you know, the calling upon Zeus or
right,
Hades, know, Athena or something like that is, you know, it's, I think it's a little bit too distant. I don't know. There's that noise. I don't know if that's your thing on your end or...
I think I see what you mean, how it's kind of like it's more related to childhood effigies than like a cult and adult orientated, you know, like euphemisms. Like, I mean, what I mean by euphemism there is like something that is more of a story within a story than just a myth, you know?
Right.
Like,
well,
like a complete kind of rendition of, because I know a lot of rituals tend to be a little more involved, you know, you have to keep citing mantras over and over and over and over until the mojo really gets bubbled up, you know?
Right.
But, that's great to know. That's great to know what you guys think of that. Oh, wait, Zeno, you didn't get to corroborate your...
I didn't get to answer yet. Actually, first thing, what do you prefer to be called? I know you as Lake Shaman, but I also know you as Pan's Hoof.
Really? It's not... You know, Lake Shaman, that's one name I could have picked out of, like, 20 names, so... It's not relevance, you know.
I'm asking what you prefer to be called.
Yeah, and I'm saying it doesn't hold that much relevance. But Pan's Hoofs, I guess, since I'm on the show, if that's okay with you guys. I mean,
that would be certainly fine. but, see, whether you realize it or not, my question to you was completely relevant to your question to me prior to it.
Reverse psychology or anything, or
nothing along those lines, but rather, you know, I look at mythos as being aspects of, you know, different currents and different ideas or ideology. I look at them as being a face or a name to kind of unify the symbol.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
the symbol to you, exactly? I mean, is that the power kind of symbol, or mystical?
Well, the symbol itself to me is the gnosis of it.
Oh, okay.
For me, the experience that you get when interacting with that symbol, that's that's the beneficial part of it. That's what's empowering.
Mm-hmm.
And so my look upon it is that, you know, every culture had these different aspects, and some of them co-related, and some of them weren't quite co-related, and some of them went off in different directions, but they were all describing proprietary traits of a particular paradigm. And, you know, especially working in magic, it's important to build that kind of psychodrama into what you're doing. You wouldn't
as LaVey said, right? As LaVey even said, man needs ritual.
Man does. Man needs ritual and everything.
It's very true. It's very true.
So that's my two cents.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mm.
Not even
I was just saying that's my two cents.
I mean,
that's
I was just
my two
saying,
cents, please.
I'm sorry, we're starting to cut each other off a little bit here. I hear crackling, and I can't tell who's talking.
it's probably because I'm outside.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right, well, hey, thanks for the feedback and everything, though. I definitely appreciate that.
Sure.
Definitely
good
talk.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
You know, there was something else, and I don't want to stagnate into oblivion because I can't think of exactly what else I was going to expound on, but there was something else that had to do with mythology or some kind of note, like, I don't know, like Jung, like, do you guys like Carl Jung at all, or do you read into his stuff? So now I've asked you if you have, and you said, yeah, you know, you've read his stuff, but I mean, is there anything in particular that, you know, that...
Carl Jung?
Yeah.
Yeah, Carl Jung. He's the guy who basically brought alchemy back from the dead.
Oh,
yeah, his mother was actually a witch. Apparently,
I was not aware.
I've read that.
I was unaware. Honestly, I haven't studied him much as a character. I have had a pretty good look at his work, and
yeah, I'm reading his fake book called Jung. I'm sorry, I always say Jung. I'm in Jung in the Lost Gospel. I always used to pronounce it Jung before I knew it was Jung. So
yeah,
right.
So it's Jung in the in the Lost Gospels. There's such a huge J on the front of the cover, it makes me just go J. But and it's really good. They go into, like, you know, I love how they go into, they compare the Gnostic, you know, the Sethian Gnosticism, and how actually it does correlate a little bit with some of the Christian myths and archetypes. For example, Horus was also supposed to be born of a virgin. Is that interesting?
That is very interesting, and I was.
Some people don't know about that. I don't think a lot of people do exactly know about some of those little things. And I know those are just like, you know, you could say, well, what does that really have to do with the overall, you know, dominion of it? But those things, I think, you know, it's good just to read into that kind of stuff. I mean, because you can just pick up little tidbits along the way of what your own archetype really means to you, you know, what everything, because we tend to look at things kind of one-sidedly, like Temple of Set, you think, all right, well, that's everything that has to do with Seth or Set, you know, but once you read more into Seth and Set, I think you can see that maybe it's not quite as it is portrayed, say, with Michael Aquino, the way he runs his temple, you know?
Right, not quite as black and white.
Right, yeah, because it's very metaphysical. I mean, I know that there's so many degrees, and it's based on your knowledge of metaphysics and all that stuff, but I just wonder how rigorous all that is. It must be very arduous, you know? It must have to go through a lot behind the ranks, but
I think sometimes there's the danger of promoting rising in the ranks and technical armchair knowledge in favor of putting stuff into practice and you know, getting further in the actual world.
Like elitism versus kind of I'm trying to think, a meritocracy. A meritocracy not judged on exactly wealth, but on how much you know.
Yeah, not only how much you know, but how much you utilize your knowledge and how effectively you do utilize your knowledge. So it's like a total understanding, like knowledge plus what I would call being in the fourth way sense, that you know, knowledge is everything you know, and being is everything
you are, I guess,
inside
of you,
that you can, it allows you to use that knowledge to the best of your ability. I think I don't know about enough about the Temple of Set right now.
Yeah, right.
To make any kind of qualified judgment, but I know the Church of Satan is even on the map. It's not knowledge or being. It's, you know, being an asshole, basically.
Hey, do you guys mind if I ask one more question? But it's about the Church of Satan, actually.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you think if Anton LaVey was still alive, that the Church would be like a burgeoning, you know, little like, do you think it would really still be going strong? Do you think there would be a lot more Satanists?
I think so, I think LaVey would have evolved the Church of Satan to a point where it could compete with the best of them in the 21st century. I think the Church of Satan had some growing to do at the latter part of the 20th century, and I think he died before he could really see those changes realized.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I think, and I'm going to kind of paraphrase somebody here, but what I think is along the lines of what Avengers saying. However, I think that LaVey was wise enough to know that at the time that he created the Church of Satan, it was a reactive movement.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that he would have come to a point once the satanic panic had all died out and everything, that he would have probably continued his disbandment. If you remember, towards the end of his hold of the Church of Satan, he disbanded all of the grottos because he realized that there was another type of network that was going on.
Yeah.
He realized that the internet was getting popular.
Yeah.
And he
Did
saw
you know
it
that
going
Boyd Rice was, this is just what I heard, but Boyd Rice was supposed to be elected to be high priest instead of, there was some coercion between, like, you know, Michael Aquino and Anton LaVey, as everyone knows, but there was supposed to be something where Boyd Rice was going to be elected over someone else. It was either Shrek or Aquino or... Because
right.
I know Nicholas Shrek, like, they, him and Xena wanted to take over the whole thing. They wanted to deride Anton.
Right.
And it didn't work. Even though it's... Isn't that
well,
funny that he was in retirement, they still couldn't do it. They still really couldn't go all the way, so they just were like, oh, well, okay. Let's move to Germany.
As far as I know, LaVey, after he died, he left it to... I don't know if he married her, Blanche Barton, but... she was just his girlfriend or mistress, or I know she had one of his child, had a child of his too.
Yeah,
They were together for many years.
Yeah, I didn't know too much about
the Church of Satan to her, and I think she sold it to Gilmore and that Nadrimi woman or whatever, and they have since run into the ground. But yeah, I think. Well, it's the same thing. You know, if money hadn't gotten into it, then Michael Aquino and the Temple of Set wouldn't have started their own thing competing against the Church of Satan. I think, you know, they did that whole walkout in the mid-70s because Anton LaVey wanted to sell priesthoods at top dollar. And Aquino considered that blasphemous. And going against the infernal mandate that he saw and recognized, and so they split.
I just wonder what would have happened if they would have, like, kept reign over, like, you'd have all these, you'd have, like, Rice being, you know, a spokesman, you'd have Aquino still being a spokesman, you'd have perhaps even someone like Shrek still being a spokesman. Just imagine having all these, you know, just these...
Yeah.
Speakers there, or these, you know, I don't know, these upper echelon emissaries for, you know, it maybe would have been just too much, you know.
I think that had Boyd Rice and Aquino stayed in that position, I think that rather than being the pretentious assholic organization that we know today, I think that it would have all the merit to back its pretentiousness, and so it wouldn't in that state be pretentious, but rather it would be a true elitist society.
Right. More of a classy kind of something that's actually more relatable to, like, because it seems like it may have gotten too homogenous and less heterogeneous, you know, or who knows? I mean, because I know it's not supposed to be too homogenous. Right, I mean, it's supposed to be individualistic and, you know.
Right.
But
I think that
anyway.
That people saw the opportunity to exploit this, and they went about it way too soon. Not that it was wrong for them in the first place to exploit it, but that they sprang too soon.
Yeah. Yeah. That 80s, that time in the 80s, that, like, what do they call that? The Satanic Panic or something?
Panic, yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, at that time, I think Satanism was, you know, a real threat to the establishment, and that's why churches, Christian churches, created this panic state, sort of not only get people in, but...
That carried on a long way, too. That carried out into the 90s, and it's, people were still... I mean, look at Manson, for example. Like, he was... threatened, like, death threats, like, bombing a building he was playing a show in, like...
Right.
I mean, he had it, like, he's, like, so lucky, honestly, I think, that nothing ever happened, like, never shot at, never, like... like, it surely shows you, like, there's some power there. Like, perhaps something else that's protecting him besides just his own logic, you know?
Yeah. Well, I certainly believe in external forces, and I think that if someone is really on the left-hand path, that to a certain extent they're protected, and that they get further away from the law of accident, and they become more under the the law of fate, or start to acquire a destiny instead of just randomly going around and this happens, that happens, they have good luck, they have bad luck. They're just kind of drifting through life.
I totally agree, because ignorance in masses, it can't beat the power of one very knowledgeable one, like one single strong entity, you know?
Yeah.
Because ignorance in masses, that just breeds even more of a clusterfuck, you know, to put it a little crassly. Right. But
yeah, exactly, it does.
Appreciate everyone's talking, though. That was cool.
Sure.
Yeah, right.
I think we're going to probably let you go, so maybe some other people can call
absolutely.
In.
Finish up the show.
But yeah, it was great to have you on, and keep listening and keep calling in the weeks from now.
I definitely will. I'll stay tuned to see what topics you guys are, expressing and everything, and we'll keep supporting.
Is there, before you get off, is there a topic that you'd like to hear us cover? One that we maybe haven't?
You guys have covered.
You don't have to get
stuff.
Back to me right now.
Okay.
Think about it. Yeah.
Okay.
Because we would take suggestions. Because sometimes we're Beast and I are talking about it Thursday night. And we're like, what should we have the next show be?
You know, there should be a thread on your website.
In a row.
You should make. Do you have a thread on your website that you, like, kids can, like plug in like something they want to hear?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I can maybe look up something like that.
We could create something like that for sure, and then also, if people really want to make suggestions, there's a comment spot right on the front page of our Blog Talk Radio, and you just freaking type it in. Hey, I'd like to hear you guys talk about this.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, you guys have a good rest of the show.
You too, man. Thanks for calling.
Okay. See you guys.
Okay. That was that.
All right. We have a question.
The end of that weird beeping, that or whatever it was in the background. I think that was from his phone, but
that's possible. We have a question that's actually hit the chat room, man. So I'm going to throw it out. Starlight Starbright 666 says, "What are your ideas on magic without ritual?"
Okay. Yeah, we talked about this a couple weeks ago.
Right. Last week, and then...
Yeah. By ritual, you mean like a big ceremony with, a whole bunch of, props and designated a certain time, and maybe you have candles and robes and a scepter or a wand and a dagger, and, you've got all these images, and it's like a big chamber, and, it's like this whole full-on ritual. Every once in a while, I think that's cool. Maybe say three times a year, I think that's a good idea. But like every week or something, or even every month, I think that's kind of unnecessary. If people like to do it, more power to you. Go ahead and do it. But I don't think magic needs ritual. I think the magic is inside you, and you have the power to direct these forces and work your will on the world. And I think that's what you should concentrate on. That's more important than any kind of ritual or following guidelines or, facing east and chanting this three times fast and all that.
Sure. I'm going to actually further expound what you're saying by saying that a true magician, a true practicer of magic, is typically involved in some form of esoteric enhancement to kind of strengthen their prana, or their essence, as Gurdjieff would call it, and to give their life force the potency to be able to perform magic without ritual. You know, by strengthening your will and strengthening your life force, you'll inevitably have more control over the environment around you. And I think that you can peel away all of the mystical bullshit attached to it, which I'm not calling it bullshit, but what I'm saying is that you can peel away all the other aspects, bring it right down to a down-to-earth, primal type of thing, and you'll find that the rules still apply. The stronger you make yourself, the more you'll be able to infect the environment around you.
Yeah.
So, what's that?
I said that makes a lot of sense to me.
I think so, and I'd love anybody to call and argue with me. I'd be more than happy to take a few minutes and, you know, take a challenge. So, Starlight Starbright 666, our call-in number is, let's see here, where the hell is it on here now?
Oh, I got it.
347-989-1371.
So, yeah, if you or anyone else wants to talk about that stuff, call in. We'll put you on the air. But anyway, going back a little bit to what Pan's Hoof brought up about different things like mythologies and Satanism, eventually I do see us consolidating into a type of New World Order, not what conspiracy nuts think is happening, you know, but I think, you know, borders are lessening and the world is getting smaller. You know, communications are opening things up. You know, we're trying to get everyone on the same track, I think. And eventually, who knows, maybe we'll have one world religion and then we'll have, you know, one currency and one language. And, you know, the people of Earth will be as one, really. You know, we'll have a whole central society that that everyone can be a part of, and we'll just live in different places, but it'll all be one giant united nation. I think that's going to be in our future, and then probably in the next couple hundred years.
That's curious, because a lot of my work and research as of lately has been focusing on developing a strategy in which we could actually form a social superorganism and maintain growth and actually kind of evolve in that manner. I think if you look from the cellular structures up, I mean, going all the way down to just base matter, that's really what's happened is, you know, something collects until it can no longer collect, and then after that it starts replicating, and once it's created a network, then it builds into another type of material that can collect, and it keeps going up like that, and that's how you eventually get to the flesh on our bones.
Right.
You know, and
yeah.
So...
Yeah, keep evolving into a higher life form, or a higher, you know, state, and... you just have to look at the parallels. You know, from the ooze, the primordial ooze that was on Earth, you know, millions of years ago, to single-celled amoeba, to, you know, to whatever, multi-celled organisms and reptiles and birds and mammals and man. And you know, evolution isn't finished.
Oh no, I don't think it ever could be finished. I think once, let's say we come to a state of totality on this planet, and all of the Earth and all of its organic material is all working in unison and striving as one big superorganism. Well, then, you know, you've come to a planetary level in which another type of a superorganism could be formed. And I think ultimately, you know, it just continues and continues, but it depends on our own ability to, you know, and evolve.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it probably has something to do with the universe. I don't know if the universe is expanding or contracting or what it's doing, but, you know, we're subject to the whims of greater forces out there, you know, the macrocosm. And but we can operate outside of that too. And but that makes me wonder, you know, if we are heading towards one great whole, is that something that we're doing semi-consciously, or is that, you know, whose plan is that? Is that, you know, the lesser gods of the earth? Or, you know, is that basically our universe? That's just the way things are going. Is it going that way by design, by their design? You know, are they trying to get something out of us in that way? I don't believe that they're trying to help us out, because, you know, they've had all this time. And, you know, it's like take three steps forward and then two steps back. You know, progress is stymied all the time. You know, are there's signals or vibrations from Universe B where the great old ones lurk? You know, are they doing something? Are they trying to help us along and you know, solidify our purpose and bring us closer together and try to evolve us consciously? Or are we trying to do it ourselves in some small way?
I think, and I'm assuming that you're asking my personal opinion here. Or maybe you're just putting it out there for everyone. And either way, I'm going to interject my personal opinion into this. I believe that it's kind of a mixture of all of the above, because there's this consistent struggle for different ideologies and different currents of energy going throughout things. I think if we're looking specifically at our species and its evolution, nothing's controlling it. Nothing is building it up to the way that it's going. It's kind of all just spinning wildly out of control at this point in time. And, you know, maybe the AO is, in fact, you know, trying to send us some signals, but it's so far advanced in its ideas and concepts and its methods that it's the equivalent of us trying to communicate with an ant or an amoeba.
Okay. So you think, what do you think of the way things are going in the world now? You think it's, you know, that progress is not being made, that we're not seeing evolutionary shifts for the good or for the better?
I do not think that progress is being made. I believe that there's actually this huge hindrance. As an organism, the world, mankind as an organism, we have become so fixated upon materialism that we're no longer trying to, you know, as a whole, build towards something better. You know, in the 60s, we began, you know, going out into space with the idea that, you know, we would eventually need to spread out there. Well, at that point, all of our technologies, all of our resources, all of our children, you know, that they should have been, you know, prepped to aid in that journey outward. I mean, no matter how you look at it, eventually man is going to populate the earth so much that all of the natural resources are going to be completely and totally just wiped.
Well, where would we go in our solar system?
I don't think that we could go anywhere in our solar system, which is why we would need to develop a faster form of travel, either that or learn how to use the elements that are contained on planets that at this point in time don't seem to be of any type of resource to us. But I'm sure if we can, you know, if a man can drop a small pill into a bottle of his own piss and it turn into, you know, water that's consumable. I'm sure that we could find a way to utilize, you know, the materials and the elements on other planets that are within our reach.
That's a good point. And I think what you're saying is a lot, to a large degree, right on target, and it's very valid. Although I would argue that the progress, however slight, is being made. I mean, you got the codification of Gurdjieff's teaching. You got movies like The Matrix. You've got communications like the internet, which is opening up and getting people talking. You probably have more democracy now than ever before. More people's voices being heard, and more governments are acting in a fairer way than before. There are a lot of little things that I think in the last 200 years have greatly improved people's lives individually and as a whole. I think there's a lot of room for improvement still, and a lot of things are really fucked up. You know, there's untold suffering going on throughout the world. But I do think things are better now, and I'm just trying to get a handle on why and what it means. I mean, some of my questions are just rhetorical. I don't expect, like, a definitive answer.
Sure.
But I think it's important to ask those, and if someone does have a theory or an answer, then I'd like to hear about it, and we can talk about it.
All right. First thing, we do have another question from the chat room. They want to know if either of us have read Letters from the Earth by Mark Twain. I personally have not. I don't know about you, Venger.
I haven't either. I've sort of read some Mark Twain, and I've seen some videos and stuff. I remember that creepy claymation video where these kids go in this time machine and they talk to the devil or something. I don't know if you've seen that, but
yeah, I have actually seen videos on that, but the particular book I'm not familiar with, although right now I'm looking for a PDF so after the show's over I can start digesting it and try to figure out what connection Starlight, Starbright 666 was trying to make to it, unless you want to, you know, simplify it for me and throw it up there in the chat room.
Or maybe you were just curious about if you'd ever read it, but no,
yeah.
We haven't. So ask us something we know about, like Lovecraft or, I don't know, something that LaVey wrote. That we know about. We know about Nietzsche, you know, stuff like that. I'm not a huge reader, so I'm not as well read as I probably should be, but, well, I mean, that's just not my forte.
Well, I personally am a book or a dozen a week, depending on the week. But still, there's there's a ton of material out there, and I don't know if in my lifetime I'll ever be able to ingest all the information that's available out there. And I'm trying like hell. I want to go back real quick. Sorry, Derek. Venger, go ahead.
No, I was just saying there's a lot out there. Continue.
I want to go back real quick and clarify something, because I think that you misunderstood what I was saying when I said that I didn't believe that progress was being made and that man was just spinning out of control. What I mean is the little bit of progress that is being made by man is not because of us, but it is in spite of us. They're accidental discoveries and accidental developments that are happening. I don't believe that they're choreographed in some grand design in sequence of leading us to the ultimate enlightenment.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
I would agree with that. That man, for the most part, is asleep at the wheel, and that nobody's in control. And things, you know, technology increases. That doesn't necessarily mean that man will be able to use it for the benefit of himself and others.
Right. I mean,
but,
moreover, yeah. Man will use it for the benefit of material gain rather than what we should be looking at, which is the propagation and continuation of our species. We just kind of take for granted that you know, we'll always be here, but you can look back to these huge fossil bones of things that we call the dinosaurs that look like they just kind of dropped off the face of the planet in a hurry. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you believe in these wild conspiracies about the end of the world or not. The reality is that we're floating out here, one little dust ball, and this huge, you know, thing that we really don't understand beyond these little scientific assumptions that we've made. And even those indicate that it's possible that this big ball of fire could just smack our planet and wipe us out. You know, so the only thing that I could say, the right logic to me is if we begin colonizing beyond our current sphere, you know, that would be one way to ensure our continuation.
I believe that our continuation or the propagation of our species is only important as it pertains to our evolution and our reaching that next level or that next state. And consciousness, and seeing, which is a very old concept, seeing man as a bridge between mammal like ape and some godlike entity. You know, if man is the halfway point between monkey and God, then he needs to go the rest of the way. Otherwise, there's really no reason for the bridge to exist except for it to be crossed. If you don't cross the bridge, then there's no reason for the bridge's existence. And we are the bridge. So I think man either has to evolve or die and, you know, either shit or get off the pot. What do you think of that?
Well, I am not in disagreement with you on this, but I do want to point out the paradox that's being created by this. The problem that I see is that having none of us ever experienced this godlike entity, we really only have these vague ideas in our mind of what the potential of being a god is. You know, in one aspect, you can look at it through a couple of different lenses and determine, you know, that, you know, being godlike would be being omnipresent and all-powerful, correct? That would be the only distinguishing feature that we can really give to this particular concept that's at least imaginable in our minds. The thing of it is that we already have that as man. It's just not in a form like we think it is. The social organism, the mem-based organism that has evolved, which we call mankind or civilization, that is that organism, but it operates without direction. At this point in time, if you think about it, if somehow magically all of us were just psychically connected to each other, we could know everything that everybody knows and see everything that everybody sees. Well, we would be unstoppable. We would be all powerful. However,
I don't think people are capable of relating, you know, things objectively. You know, you could ask someone what they know or what they see, and they'll tell you something, and it may not be at all accurate because it's based on faulty perception, and it's based on ego, and it's based on agenda, and it's based on...
Sure, and I'm not saying that
But
the thing of it is, and the reason that I influenced or put emphasis on the psychic connection rather than just a connection, I mean, because we all have this potential at this point right now with the internet. The problem is that it is based around different self-deceits such as the ego and so forth, like you were saying. On the psychic connection, however, the only thing that you would really be able to gain is the objective experience or knowledge of the person in front of you, because you're obviously not going to be able to just step in and you know, all of a sudden you switch your mind into the exact same type of thinking that they're doing.
Right.
If you know,
the users
and that
could be conscious, then I think cyberspace would be a lot closer to the state of God than we've ever had before. But I think because of the flaws and limitations of man, that I don't know. In a way, the analogy kind of breaks down, and God becomes even more unknowable. Because we're just not there yet. We just can't reach that level of development, that level of understanding, those higher states of consciousness that we lack. So it's impossible to say exactly what God is and what he is not.
Right. And let me just say, I mean, because we've only got 2 minutes left in this show, man. Let me just say that you hit the nail right on the head. We do not have the ability to even conceptualize what God is. And so it's kind of the paradox itself is, since we do not know what God is, how do we strive for Godhood?
Right. And how do we do it, and why exactly do we want it? You know, I don't know what it would feel like to have tentacles, but I know I want them. You know, that's kind of the rub. But I think we can all agree that following the work set out by Gurdjieff and developed more by Ostensky and other associated people, that is one of the major keys, as well as the rest of the Cthulhu cult paradigm of achieving Godhood. But the precise way of getting there, and what it's going to be like, and how it's going to feel, and what we do with it when we get it, that more or less is still a mystery, I think, and will remain so. We're alone.
I agree. Well, I don't know how long it'll remain, so I agree with everything up until that point. But the thing about ideas, ideology like this, is that they develop, and sometimes in rapid proportions.
Mm-hmm.
So for right now, we could all, you know, only know what we know, and tomorrow somebody may give birth to the exact notion of what God is. And it'll spread like wildfire.
Yeah.
So.
But knowing what it is and experiencing it are two different things.
Sure, but once you know what it is, it's easier to experience it.
That's true as well. Well, hopefully people will want to discuss these topics. Especially the last one we were talking about, more so, and they'll log on and register at our forum on the website, cultofcthulhu.net, and if you wanna start doing your own old blogs and things like that, just go to Cthulhu-Cults.com, and Vizino can hook you up with privileges to blog on there. And I guess that's it. That's all of our show.
And we're out of time, man. So everybody who archives this, next week I think we're going to hold one more open discussion. So
I think so. I think we should do a trilogy of open discussion. And then we'll start having some cool guests on, probably Xandor LaVey, maybe the guy behind Unquiet Void. Maybe we can have Zach from Satanic International on.
Let's work on getting a bunch of people on. I know we've got listeners. I watch the stats every week, so I know they're out there. It's time, you know, if you guys can, come on out. Let's talk about this.
Yep. Time to talk. Okay. All right. That's it. Thanks, Beast.
Yep. Thank you, Venger.